Welcome to Record Roulette. My name is Eamon O'Flynn. I'm here with Nathan Smith to discuss another album from the Rolling Stone 500 Greatest Albums list. Unlike our last episode, when neither of us had ever heard the album or heard of the album, this week's selection is familiar to just about everyone who has ever seen a movie about the 1960s or Vietnam. Or The Big Lebowski, which has two songs from today's album on its soundtrack. Cosmos Factory is Creedence Clearwater Revival's fifth album. When released, it topped the charts in six different countries and reached gold status within 6 months. Since then, it's gone platinum many times over. And it's easy to see why. This one album includes instant classics like Run Through the Jungle, Who'll Stop the Rain, and Looking Out My Back Door. It's at number 413 on the Rolling Stone list. I hadn't listened to this album from top to bottom before, but the fact that it was CCR made it a lot less intimidating than that Sade pick from last episode. Was that your experience, Nathan?
Yeah, there is definitely an element of coming home to this album. It was territory more familiar for a white male from southwestern Ontario. it wasn't as intimidating and as foreign. So there wasn't as much of an adjustment phase with this album as there were with some others.
Yeah, and like I said, like you basically hear CCR all over the place, whether it's this album or another one. There's a very clear CCR sound, and so it just feels familiar enough that it's not scary. So many albums we do on this show are scary as hell, and this feels good. I like this. So who picked this album? Well, we have an actor, writer, and very funny lady named Claire Blackwood as our guest. She's a graduate of the Second City's famous Sketch Conservatory program. She's a writer for the Beaverton. She's a regular guest on CTV's The Debate, where she called Galen Weston a, and I quote, whiny little baby. Thanks for joining us, Claire, and thanks for standing up to the man.
Thank you so much for having me. I will take the chance to call Galen Weston many, many things, many of which are not TV appropriate. So
this isn't TV. We can call him whatever we want. He's not sponsoring this.
Oh, what a little fucking dweeb. Am I allowed to swear on this?
We are now. No, we are. Definitely. Great. Go for it.
we prefer the term nerd.
Dweeb is almost the perfect. That's a perfect. Yes. We.
No, dweeb is more pertinent to Galen Weston. He didn't deserve nerd. I'm a nerd.
Yeah. Nerd has a positive connotation these days.
Correct.
I've heard Conan O'Brien talk a bit about the relationship between sketch comedy and music. The basic similarities are kind of obvious. A group of people on a stage performing. But the bigger idea is that everyone needs to be in sync in order to make it all work. And when it does, it transcends any one performer. Do you, as someone who has done this, do you agree? Do you see those parallels?
Sure. I mean, good on you, Conan O'Brien. Guess he knows something about comedy. Yeah. No, for sure. I never really thought of it that way, but I like
who's
it.
Cooler?
I've done a lot of musical comedy, so sorry, who's cooler?
Yeah, sketch players are rock stars.
Oh.
I've put you in the impossible position.
No, there's no, that is an absolutely possible. I mean, rock stars. I mean, good God, sketch comedians are the nerdiest people alive. I am one.
Yeah, that's
we sit in our basements and come up with funny little jokes about our anxieties. That's not cool.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, it really depends on what angle you're coming at it from and which rock stars you're talking about. I mean, Rivers Cuomo from Weezer looks like a big nerd. Is he cool?
I mean, maybe we drink as much.
Yeah,
I don't know.
That's maybe the similarities. There's a lot of similarities.
That's oh yeah.
Why did you pick Cosmos Factory for us to listen to?
Because I'm a very uneducated musical person, and so I didn't recognize a lot of the albums on the list, and I grew up with CCR and I love them very much, but I realized that I'd never listened to a full album. So I figured this is an excellent excuse to do so. Yeah,
the whole basis of the podcast is basically I am not well educated when it comes to music, and similarly looked at the list and said, nope, don't know what any of this is. And saw bands like CCR or saw Neil Young or something like that and said, oh, thank God. Some of the ones I know are here. But yeah. And likewise, I think listening to albums from top to bottom kind of gives you a different perspective on a band and what they did, because you can hear those big songs, but you don't necessarily hear the ones in between or what they were trying to do. You know, an album is like a piece of art itself as much as a song is. Mm-hmm. So I think because you're a fan of CCR, my guess is that you liked this album. The big broad.
God, I hated it.
Yeah. Oh, I loved CCR before this, and now I
I know. Now I'm burning all their albums that I definitely own. No, it was great. I really liked it. It was, I think my overall feeling about CCR, regardless of what album it is just like, you can't beat John Fogerty's mm-hmm. voice. And I will listen to it forever. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree.
It had a bunch of the songs that I really, really love. I feel like all of my favorites are from different albums. So this one was like, oh, that's where this one's from. This is Run for the Jungle, like this, that kind of stuff. So that was fun.
Yeah, and they didn't actually, they weren't around for very long either. I think as a band, as CCR, because they were together as like various other weird groups beforehand. But I think they're CCR from 65 to like 72 or something. And so everything we know of CCR is that in that little tiny area. They're not exactly the Beatles, but it's that kind of feeling of a lot happened in a very small time frame, which means they have these albums that are packed with songs we know. Nathan, what were your initial impressions? What were you?
Well,
how do you feel about this album?
I guess a few things. Like Claire, I'd never listened to an album of theirs. Like I've heard their songs on greatest hits packages. I've heard them in movie soundtracks. I've heard them, you know, in all sorts of different places, but never kind of an album from beginning to end. So that was a new experience for me. I thought it was a decent album. What sort of surprised me when I looked into their sort of their history, as brief as it was, as you mentioned, that surprised me that they were only around for 5 or 6 years. I just sort of assumed by virtue of their catalog, they've been around for 15 mm-hmm. or 20, but that this album sort of in the life cycle of the band came towards the end. When I first listened to it, I thought this must be their first or second album mm-hmm. because there's a lot of covers or songs that could be covers. And then there's sort of hints at what I thought was the classic CCR sound. So I thought this was almost a first or second album that was kind of hinting at sort of their more kind of traditional songs to come. And then I sort of went back and looked and like, oh, this is actually, you know, mm-hmm. near the end of their recording history. So I thought that was
close to the end. Yeah, I think his brother leaves like within about a year or something of this coming out. And so the band's over. Did either of you think that CCR was from like the South or something?
I mean, yeah, that's definitely the vibe that they were going for. I think, aren't they described by some as like swamp rock? It's just kind
of swamp rock.
Yeah. And I don't know whether that's, you know, them trying to co-opt that kind of feeling or whether that's just how John's voice sounds and everybody kind of just put it on them because they were like, well, this man can't be from anywhere else but Louisiana. What you mean is yeah. from Washington? Like it's,
he's from San Francisco yes. area.
Yeah.
Like what?
I mean, like, to be fair, and this is a band that I think in the questions that you sent, like, I feel like this might come up, spoiler alert.
Yeah,
but it's like when you look at Mumford & Sons, and for a long time, everyone's like, oh, wow, look at these Dust Bowl lads, so broke, so English, so like talking about things that the poor people can, and they're all fucking rich dudes from London. Like, so it's that kind of little surprise.
Yeah, they're actors in some ways. Mm-hmm. They've taken on a role as part of their
yeah,
as
or
part
like
of their gig.
Stan Rogers, you know, Stan Rogers is from Halifax. He's from Hamilton. He's not from the East Coast. Most of his stuff talks about being a fisherman from the East Coast, you know, and I love the guy, yeah. but again, he was another one that I was like, "Oh, he's not from the East Coast. That's surprising."
Yeah, that's when I went back and kind of evaluate, like, I was like, why do I think this apart from just his voice? And I realized that the first time I came in touch with CCR, I think, was that there's a CCR song, Born, I think it's Born on the Bayou.
Born on the Bayou.
It feels it has to be that, is in the movie Swamp Thing. But it's not Swamp Thing like the good Swamp Thing, like the first one. I don't know if there actually is a good Swamp Thing, but it's like the second or third one where like Heather Locklear is in it and she's like really early in her career and it's kind of just terrible. It's a terrible, terrible movie, but it's all about swampy kind of stuff and it feels like very Louisiana-y. And so I think from that, I was like, they're swamp guys. They like swamps. They're talking about bayous and green rivers.
They came from a swamp.
Yeah, they came from a swamp. That's who they are. Nathan, what about you? Just to close the loop, did you think they were from the South? Did you before looking into this, or did you always know that they were from San Francisco?
No, I was I was shocked and saddened to learn they were from San Francisco. But I because I always assume that they're like sort of distant cousins to Kings of Leon or somebody. And they may be. But I was, after finding out where they're from, it sort of made me give them more credit, thinking how different they had to be given their surroundings and kind of given the era mm-hmm. in which they existed, where everybody's kind of doing this hippie kind of shoegazing psych rock, and they're doing this, you know, deep yeah. south gritty kind of new spin on almost 50s rockabilly R&B rock. So you have to have a certain, I think, conviction to you to pursue that sound in that kind of an environment. So first dismayed and then kind of impressed at their origin yeah. story.
And Cosmo's Factory, the factory, the place they're referring to, is in Berkeley. And so, you know, Berkeley in the late 1960s, yeah, does not sound like this to me. To me, does not sound like country in the South and even R&B. So before listening to this album, I always kind of thought there was a CCR sound and almost like they were a genre unto themselves. But I was kind of amazed to hear so many different styles in this album. You know, like when you do listen from song to song, you can hear an R&B song, you can hear a clear soul song or a clear country song. Did you guys hear the same thing, or were you surprised by hearing these different genres in the CCR kind of sound?
Yeah, I think I'm a little bit less discerning, but like I definitely did know. I'm just like shitting on myself. That's fine. Welcome to the music podcast. It did kind of take a lot of twists and turns for me. And I mean, I remember my first kind of thought about that was the song Travelin' Band, mm-hmm. because in contrast with the song before, I just automatically just sat up in my chair and I was like, oh my God, this just makes me want to be on a dance floor doing the twist. And I realized that makes me sound like an 80-year-old grandpa, but like, I can't say that for a lot of traditional CCR songs, the way that I view them. And like, yeah, a lot of the songs do have that kind of swamp rock that they're known for, but then occasionally they'll just throw in a saxophone and yeah. you're like, oh, I guess we're doing a saxophone now. That's cool.
Yeah. And even Ramble Tamble, like in the middle, it goes into like a little bit of a tiny bit of that psychedelia kind of stuff, which I don't associate with them either. Like it's just like they were kind of touching all these little bits of different genres. What about you, Nathan? Were you kind of surprised to hear these different sounds from them?
Somewhat surprised. There wasn't quite as many different sounds as I thought there might be. Like I there were more than I was expecting, because I just sort of always assumed they were kind of a straight up rock band, which I think in large part they are, but I, you know, certainly there's that signature kind of CCR sound, which is their sound in general. Mm-hmm. But you know, there was, I heard a lot of kind of Chuck Berry, Little Richard, like kind of 50s rock and roll. There was certainly some blues influence. There's a bit of country on occasion, but I mean, aside from, you know, I heard it through the grapevine, like there's inherently kind of an R&B soul quality there, but I didn't hear a lot of R&B and soul beyond that. But that said, it was a bit more yeah. diverse than I thought it would be.
The you mentioned Little Richard. I don't know if either of you know this. They got sued for the song Travelin' Band because it sounded too similar to Little Richard. Yeah. it was meant as like we're doing this because we love Little Richard. Oh, no. And Little Richard is like, no, you're stealing from Little Richard.
Well, if you love him, the best way to honor him is to pay him. But
true.
Yeah, exactly. And they did. That actually reminds me of just something totally separate. I read recently that that Guns N' Roses, their album with a bunch of covers all over it, it's like the Spaghetti Incident or something like that. They actually apparently recorded that. They recorded some songs in that because they loved bands and they knew they were gigantic. And if they recorded this little song from this little band that no one knew, they'd be able to make money for that band because they'd get some of the royalties. I was like, that's nice. What a nice thing for Guns N' Roses to do. I mean, they all hated each other at that point.
What a nice band Axl Rose turned out to be. Wow,
yeah.
Wow.
I mean, in comparison with many others, I think he's okay.
Oh, no, don't go on Twitter, my friend.
I try not to. So the one thing that also I thought a bit about whenever I think of CCR is you think about John Fogerty, right? It's impossible to not think about John Fogerty. It's like his voice. He's the lead guitarist. He's writing everything. But when I did hear these kind of slightly different styles throughout, and knowing that it's not just him. He's not playing all the instruments. I kind of got a greater respect for what the band was doing with him. Do you think the band deserves a little bit more credit for what CCR accomplished on something like this album than maybe they usually get?
I mean, I'm kind of always a very much an art wouldn't exist without every single person involved type of person. So my answer to this question is kind of inevitably yes. Especially because in any band, for till the end of time, the lead singer is always going to get the most attention and the most credit. Nobody thinks about the bass player. Nobody thinks about the drummer unless you're Ringo Starr. Like it's so I mean, yes, because without yes, obviously he has the voice, but without the band, it would just be him singing about grapevines alone in his studio. So
yeah. Yep, I agree. And I also think that there's something to the idea, and maybe it's also just an age, the age that they're at, where they're more productive. But, you know, people know there are John Fogerty songs, but there are CCR songs are the places where people know John Fogerty. And so there was some sort of magic alchemy that happens when those four people were together versus, you know, 3 years later when he's by himself traveling around. What about you, Nathan?
I'll give slightly less credit to the band. Like I think they're a tight band, obviously. They're good players. There's no weak links there. But I just think because, and I agree with Claire that typically the singer does get the most credit, but I think in this instance it's extremely well deserved because that is the sound basically. Like I think there's a lot of other bands, like whether it's just sort of the rhythm section or the drummers that could make those sounds. Again, it's not that they don't deserve any credit, but I think it's more you can sort of replicate that a lot easier in a way that you cannot replicate his voice. And his voice, you know who it is instantly when you hear that. You don't know who it is playing if you just kind of hear an intro to a song or a middle part. It could be any number of groups from that era or later. But his voice is instantly recognizable. And I think, which is to say nothing of him being the songwriter and in large part the arranger. So the band was good, but I still think that so long as he's writing the songs and he has other sort of capable musicians around him, that sound would have existed regardless.
That's the one thing I kind of thought about with the band is, you know, I mean, I came from a fairly small town, but these guys all met in their high school. And the idea that you can put together four random guys from some random high school and put and play really good music, like it makes more sense to me if it's a bunch of people coming together into one place. And that works, I think, to a degree with sketch comedy. I think you could probably say the same thing. There were people who were doing that kind of thing or improv or whatever at my high school. But like two of them were really good. And then the rest of them were kind of like, who knows? And those two maybe go to somewhere like Toronto and Second City and they get to be around other people who are very good at it and committed. And like that's like the Eagles. The Eagles, for instance, are a bunch of people who all left their hometowns to go to LA, I think it was, to pursue that career. So it makes sense that they're good at different. They are good at playing their instruments. They're good at doing what they're doing. It always kind of blows me away when a band is like, it's four random guys from the same high school. There was 2,000 or 1,000 students in that high school, and four of them were able to create music as good as CCR makes. Always kinds of, it doesn't seem probable to me. But you mentioned this, like, Nathan, that his voice is basically the CCR sound. I really struggled to describe his voice when I was doing the 101 episode. How would you describe his vocals? Like if you had to describe them to someone who'd never heard John Fogerty before and prep them, what would you say to those people, Nathan?
I don't know. It's just, I mean, I don't know how to, it's not as if he's my favorite singer of all time, but I don't think accurately describe it. I mean, it's certainly powerful. It's as if Robert Plant had a bit more oomph behind his voice. Like it's a very thick sounding voice. Like he can get to those really high notes and sort of high registers without the voice becoming thin or weak. Like it's just a powerful, visceral voice that has a great range to it. And it's gritty. It's kind of like rough and sandpapery, but very melodic. Like, I don't know. It's just, but again, that's why it's the sound, I think. Like it's like Axl Rose. Like it doesn't sound the same, but it's that same sort of, you know, immediately who it is and what group it is when you hear that voice. Or Eddie Vedder. Like I think it's one of the highest compliments you can pay to a singer.
We're going to have some serious trouble with Zeppelin fans. You saying that Robert Plant has a thinner voice than John Fogerty. I feel like that's going to be a problem for us.
Really? But, I always thought that.
That's why I don't go into
accepted knowledge.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. You can make the argument when people start using this. Claire, what about you? How would you describe this this voice?
I mean, like, all of the above. I think it's just kind of like, imagine you're on a riverboat in a swamp, mm-hmm. and like just some really grungy ghost just kind of, you just hear it kind of singing grungy from ghost. Around the corner at you in a very haunting yet pleasant way.
Yeah, a gritty ghost haunting your riverboat. That sounds about right. That's actually something I've talked a lot about, how much I love the band. And one of the things I really love about the band is that they don't seem like they're from an era, almost. Like, they, like, certainly not from a 1960s era. Like, they almost feel like they could be put on a riverboat, and these guys do too. Like, they just don't feel of their time. If I was to describe him, I think I'd probably use the grit. I'd probably talk about his weird pronunciation of words, which apparently does not align with anything around the San Francisco Bay Area. I actually went into a deep dive on, like, why he pronounces words like this. And the best I can come up with is that it is, as you'd mentioned, Claire, a manufactured sound. Mm. That he has kind of taken this New Orleans pronunciation in some ways and just incorporated it into how he sings. And it's not all that different from even like the Beatles. The Beatles didn't sing with their accents, certainly not early on. They got rid of the accent early on. I think a lot of people do that. But I do feel like if someone came out today and did exactly what he did, I wonder how many conversations we'd be having about cultural appropriation. because like the specific sound that he was going after, that apparently he has talked about, is that there was a lot of these black singers from New Orleans that he really liked, and he basically just tried to mimic their voice. And that's what we get as the CCR sound, as a white guy trying to be a black guy from New Orleans.
I mean, that's definitely a conversation. And it would be a conversation that we are having more and more, and I think rightly so nowadays. So possibly. I mean, not to get all like, you couldn't make this today.
It sounds like a comedy discussion. You can't say things anymore.
Yeah. I'm like, but can't you say things? What do you want to say? What kind of things do you want to say?
You can say whatever you want. Mm-hmm. It's just, you don't know what the reaction is going to be. That's what whole thing's all about.
Scary.
You're still allowed to say anything. I did think it was gutsy that he covered a Marvin Gaye song. I think that's totally nuts. You know, one of the great vocalists of all time, and you're like, you know what? I'm going to cover one of his great songs and see if I can do a good version of it.
And I'm going to make it 11 minutes long.
And I'm gonna make it 11 minutes long.
Yeah.
Too. I think that's very funny.
Yeah.
And then also, Long As I Can See the Light, I thought he was very Wilson Pickett-esque there. Like, it's, you can hear that in his voice. You can hear who he's kind of replicating, or who inspired him. I never thought, and maybe I'm completely wrong about this, and it's just something I haven't paid attention to. I've never thought of John Fogerty much as a writer. I don't think he like gets put on that pedestal that a lot of people get put on. But what did you think of his writing and storytelling here, Claire?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's ever going to go down on the list of greatest writers ever. I appreciate a man who can write like huge long rock bangers, which pretty much translate to like, hey, there's a cool party down the road, or like, my girlfriend left me and I'm sad about it. I think he does a really lovely job of throwing in really succinct and nice protests about the government and war and gun control, which contrast nicely with other pieces on the album. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. Like, I don't think his writing is anything truly remarkable, but there's some really nice stuff in there.
Yeah, I think it's... his ability to kind of adapt to a little bit different style of song is kind of impressive, but yeah, I'm not sure if we'd be like, this is Dylan-esque, right, Nathan?
No, we wouldn't. But similar to what Claire said, it's not remarkable, but I think, you know, given sort of some of the areas that he's wading into, whether it's, you know, kind of light protest songs or social commentary, a lot of stuff from that time now is pretty cringeworthy. Some of it. Mm-hmm. His stuff, I mean, it's not great or brilliant, but it doesn't, it's not like, what the heck? Or I can't relate to that. Or it's just, what was he talking about? Like, so I think, you know, 40 years down the road or 50 years down the road, it holds up fairly well, which again, given the subject material, that's not always the case. So I'll give him credit for that.
The things that I thought were, you know, I did think it was interesting. He went off there, did the whole anti-gun thing, run through the jungle. The one thing, like some of these songs use so much like allusion and imagery that I'm very bad at that kind of stuff. And I think that's why I tend to like really literal songwriters. And but it still occasionally pisses me off when I realize that this is a 25-year-old writing these things. The same way it pisses me off when I realize that the Beatles broke up and George Harrison was like 27 years old. And it's like, this all happened and I'm more than a decade older than that.
Oh, no, none of us have had any. We haven't had enough booze for this conversation.
I'm only one in, yeah. But I did think Ramble Tamble was kind of interesting. I thought that there's just a lot of, again, it's just a lot of imagery being thrown at you. It's not really so much as a story as it is, you know, he's getting like emotions across really effectively. And that was the only thing that I pulled out from a lyric standpoint, was just the last part where he's like, they're selling independence, actors in the White House, acid indigestion, mortgage on my life, move mm-hmm. down the road. And that's after he's like progressively gone mortgage on my car, mortgage on my house, mortgage on my car, mortgage on my life. And just feeling that things are not going well for a person in you know, they're not particularly wealthy. I did think it was also funny that he said actors in the White House like a decade before Ronald Reagan becomes mm-hmm. president of the United States.
It's almost like politicians have always been slimy.
Yes, almost as though.
Almost
as though that's a truism. Before looking up any information about this album, but after listening to it, I assumed it was from the mid late 60s. You know, like that, like almost like the mid 60s, because you'd mentioned this, Nathan, like it's like early rock and roll feel to it. Like you could even trace some of this back to like the mid 50s. Were you surprised that it came out in 1971, given that Bowie's Changes, Zeppelin's Stairway to Heaven, and The Who's Bob O'Reilly came out in the same year?
Yeah, I was. It was always sort of a group that that I never associated with, first of all, being in the 60s at all. I sort of assumed they, and I don't know why, but I sort of assumed they were kind of early 70s to mid to late 70s kind of a group. And so when I found out when it came out, that sort of caused me to reevaluate some things and kind of look at it in the context in which it was released and the times in which it was released. So it is, it would have sounded, I think, at that time quite different from what else was around, and certainly, as we mentioned earlier, where they came from. But mm-hmm. I think it would have been a real kind of shock when people first heard that, because there's not a lot that sounds, I mean, it's not an entirely new genre by any means, but it sounds quite a bit different from a lot of the other things that were popular at the time.
Yeah. What about you, Claire?
Yes. With my extensive bibliography of musical, no, I this did not, it did not surprise me. But then it's literally just because I'm a terrible music connoisseur, and all of my favorite things come from after 1995. I like EDM and musical theater and movie soundtracks. So the idea of going between like, you know, roughly five years of music and that having a big difference, like I'm absolutely sure that that's the case. But I, unfortunately, this question is not entirely within my wheelhouse.
And unfortunately, there are no albums representing any of those genres you just listed.
No, not at all.
On this list. I think you could make an argument for that. Maybe someday we'll try and make an argument for
Hello,
for any
Rolling
one of
Stone.
Those. Yeah, exactly.
Have you heard
Get
of
on the
Wicked?
Phone. I'm telling you, it has to be there.
It slaps. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we did an episode, like, I don't know, a year and a half, 2 years ago, Nathan, that was about comedy, not comedy albums, like not stand-up comedy, but albums that are meant specifically to be funny. Like Weird Al, for instance, or Spinal Tap, or Flay of the Conchords, that there's a special, unique element to comedy and trying to make it into a song that you want to listen to, but it's still very funny. Mm-hmm. And it is still, even now, when I think about it, it's odd to me that it's not represented on the list somewhere in some form. Not to say that it's like some, you know, it's artistically, it's what they're trying to achieve, like the Beatles or something like that. But there's a lot of instances on that list of people who are like, they did this one interesting thing this one time, and that's why we listen to this or that. And it's a particular achievement to make a song funny, like truly funny.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's a microcosm of the general, like, what we consider good art. Often, I think comedy gets left by the wayside. I mean, look at the, mm-hmm. I mean, in a different kind of genre of art in general, but like, look at the Oscars. Like, when's the last time a comedy won best anything?
Major.
When's the last time like a comedic actor won best actor? Like, it's just not, I don't think, not to get too political, but like,
don't worry, we'll cut out all the political stuff.
Oh, thank God. Just bleep me. Yeah. No, but I don't think comedy gets its due, and I don't think that people actually know how hard it is to do it. So that would be my guess as to why comedy is not really as represented.
Yeah. Well, I mean, people should know it's not easy to do comedy, because I'm always trying and I'm horribly unfunny all of the time. Anyone who's listened to this show more than one episode knows I'm constantly reaching above or past my ability.
Oh, no.
The one thing I did pull when I was looking for reviews of this album, like user reviews for the One Bad Opinion that we'll get to in a second, but one actually really stuck out to me, and someone said Cosmos Factory is sort of like a miniature rock anthology. Nothing, this person says, nothing's outstanding, but everything's enjoyable and well performed. And it resonated with another or a bunch of other, you know, listener, so not critic response, but listener response, saying that it's just a collection of sounds that are from earlier. And it's kind of like they almost made they wrote a bunch of the songs. Like, there's a couple they didn't write here, but they did write almost all the songs. But they're clearly, in many cases, throwbacks to specific types of music they really liked. And as a result, people continuously said they felt that they didn't add a lot to music with this album. That is really good music, but it's not like it's adding a ton to the world. So that's that was someone in 2010, though. 2010 was a totally different era. Yeah. What was your favorite song on this album, Claire?
I have to say Run Through the Jungle. And it's not because it was on the Tropic Thunder soundtrack, and I consider Tropic Thunder to be one of the greatest comedies of all time. And it's not because of it, but I am always for politically motivated songs. It's an anti-gun anthem. It's his voice at its best. And it features a wicked harmonica solo. So I think we should bring those back in music in general.
And talk about cultural appropriation, Tropic Thunder, geez, you know, like, they're really just mashing those two things up right there with the, I mean, I'm not sure if that's cultural appropriation.
No,
or just,
it's not.
Yeah. Something else entirely, yep. But for comedy,
yep.
For comedic purposes. So it's, Nathan, what about you? Favorite song?
I go with Looking Out My Back Door. I think there were sort of several contenders, but I guess I like that one the most just because it was, I guess if you consider kind of that we talked about ad nauseum, the classic CCR sound, that one deviated slightly from it. So it was a bit of a surprise. It's an original. I mean, you talked a moment ago about sort of how many songs are written by Fogerty or the group and how many aren't. And so I thought there'd be more that were kind of CCR originals on this. And so this is one of them. And it was the one that sort of surprised me the most. I didn't really associate them with having kind of a slight country sound or slight country influence. Mm-hmm. I'm not really a country fan, but in this context, the way they did it, it was a pleasant surprise. So that was one that stood out for me the most.
Yeah. For me, it's Ramble Tamble. And I think it's just because I love the fact that it starts as one song and then it just kind of breaks down and it almost becomes an entirely different song after about 2 minutes, 2 minutes of play. But I think there was just something about how ambitious that was to open an album with a song like that, that's that long and like kind of that complicated and that has those changes, that made me, that surprised me about CCR. Cause when I think of CCR, I often think of a lot of their best known songs being, you know, 3 minutes long. Like, they were very good at packing these like kind of rock and roll songs into 3 minutes. And so to create something that had some sounds I wasn't familiar with for them, but also was just, like I said, really ambitious and really not that kind of 3 minute song was surprising. So as I've said many times, I think I always get sucked in by the first song. The first song can make or break an album, I think. And this one does a good job. This next question, I think, Nathan, I'm gonna ask you first because you have many years now of experience answering it, but Do you think this should be on the list? What is the argument for or against this thing being on a list of the greatest albums of all time?
Well, I think we sort of covered some of the reasons, but I think that CCR should be on the list. I'm not sure if this album is the one that you'd put on the list for them. And in saying that, I'm not sure what the album is, because I'd have to listen to some of their other albums front to back. I know what the singles are and what the hits are, but I don't know. Like this album came out at the end of a really prolific period for them. I was reading where they'd released like 3 or 4 albums in the span of 18 months or something absurd mm-hmm. like that. So I think the well was running close to dry, which is why you mentioned in the review from 2010 that they're kind of doing a lot of songs that are either outright other people's songs or sound a lot like other people's songs, because I think it's tough to write that much material in that short a period, record it. They were touring incessantly. So I just feel they're sort of running on fumes. And when I was looking at sort of the songwriting credits, I think 4 of the 11 were written by somebody else. And that doesn't count Traveling Band, which is, as we've said, essentially Good Golly Miss Molly with different words. So you've got 6 originals. And for a band that is as well known as CCR, and I think is integral to sort of the history of at least the rock and roll genre as they are, I'd personally like to see a bit more kind of original content on the album for that to be the flag bearer. But I certainly think the band itself deserves to be somewhere on that list. I just don't think this is the best representation of who or what they were.
So just as a quick note, they are on the list one other time with Willie and the Poor Boys, which is one of those albums that comes out right within that 3 album group. That one's at 193. Oddly, so we talk about this every once in a while about how these albums move around on the list. That one was at 388 when the list originated in 2003. It went to 309 when it was in 2012, and then it's 193 in 2020. But the thing that I find kind of strange is this one was on the list originally in the 260s and then disappeared on the second one and then came back in the 400s. And Green River, which is also is the third of those albums that you're referring to, Nathan, it was on the list at number 96. So it was considered a top 100 album of all time in 2003 and then disappeared. Super weird. Like this is why we always go back to Rolling Stone is just like, who knows what the hell they're doing. Cause like, you know, like how do you, first of all, I do think it's probably tough to pick lists like this, but at the same time, like how did you have an album and say, this is a top 100 album of all time. And then it disappears entirely. Claire, if you were going to make an argument for this to be on a list of greatest albums, what would you say?
I would just say that I really like them.
That's enough.
Thank you. Soul. Thank you, Rolling Stone. I can't speak to their editorial staff, but I think it's the perfect encapsulation of Creedence. And I think it's grungy and smoky. It has that great rock sound that they're known for. You've got the classics you've got multiple classics on there. I mean, like Nathan was saying, I feel like every album has one or two of those songs. You're like, oh yeah, one of the greatest songs of all time. Obviously, you're not going to get all of those in an album, which would make it one of the greatest albums of all time. But I think where it is right now on the list, I think what you said, it's in the 400s.
Yeah, 413.
Yeah, sure, put it there. Certainly not a top 100 album. That doesn't make any sense to me, but it's solid from beginning to end. There's nothing I think that I would skip, which I can't say a lot about.
With a lot of albums. Yeah. I feel the same way. We've listened to a lot of albums where I can't. I'm like, no, I gotta start skipping this one. I kind of feel the same as you, Nathan. Like, I do think they need to be on the list somewhere. And having not listened to Green River and Willie and the Poor Boys for this show and like really listen to it and everything, I would be fine and happy with this being CCR's representation, because as you said, Claire, it does have these really well-known songs. It does encapsulate their sound really well, and being in the 400s is totally fine with me. Like I don't think to that one review I read, I don't think it's necessarily pushing music forward, but it's such a unique sound. Anytime you can find a band that is extremely embraced, it sold like crazy, but also you know who they are the second the person opens his mouth, is to me something you almost want to capture and say, there is some lightning in a bottle with these people. So they should be represented there. I did pull one bad opinion from Amazon. Actually, I didn't. So what happened was I went in there. I tried to find one a bad opinion. There was 1,817 ratings, 4.8 star average, only 1% or one star, but nothing was about the music. This is the second time in a row that this has happened. It hadn't happened for literally years, and now two albums in a row, I couldn't find anyone saying something bad. But on Rate Your Music, I found this gem. While it is certainly focused and tuneful, I've always hated CCR. California boy and almost incomprehensible asshole John Fogerty adopts a comically fake Louisiana accent and uses it to sing all of these songs he's written about a place he had never been within 1,000 miles of until he was a famous rock star. I give 2 stars for being catchy, but so is chickenpox.
Oof.
Whew. Yeah, that's Deaver 78 in 2017, so it's pretty recent. Yeah, I mean, talked about the accent. We talked about
I mean, they're not necessarily wrong.
No, but it's, I think CCR, you like them. I think most people like them, but obviously some people hate them. Claire, you, as the person who chose this album for this episode, would you recommend this
Hell
to people?
Yeah.
And why?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's, I was pleasantly surprised to find some new songs that I really loved on the album. I'm adding Traveling Band to my playlist. I mean, basically, like, I will always recommend CCR if that's what you're into. They're such a distinct sound. You can't beat his voice if that's the kind of sound that you're into. They do some great covers. Like, basically, I don't know. I just feel like they make music for people who kind of just, like, want to smoke a joint and listen to an album on repeat. And, yeah.
All right, Nathan, what about you? Would you recommend this to other people?
Do drugs. Listen to CCR.
That is the key message from this episode. Excellent. Nathan.
Yeah, I mean, if there is somebody in the world that had never heard CCR, and there might be, you know, a handful perhaps, then yeah, I'd recommend it. Because, I mean, I think you got to experience that voice and that sound, because it has been copied so often. But if you're somebody that's sort of into CCR already, I mean, first of all, probably already heard the album, so I wouldn't recommend it. But like I said, I don't think it's the best representation of them. But yeah, if you'd never heard of this group, I wouldn't say, yeah, you're not missing much. I think you have to listen to it. And, cause again, he's one of the probably 5 or 10 rock vocalists that once you hear that voice, you know who it is and what the group is. So for that alone, I'd recommend it.
Yeah. I think I would say at worst it's inoffensive, and at best it's very good rock and roll music. So I think no matter whether you want to play in the background and just feel like you're in the 60s, or in Vietnam, then go for it.
Who doesn't?
So that's who doesn't want to feel like they're in Vietnam in the 1960s and 70s. Claire, so that's it for today. But before we sign off, where can people find your work?
Or
where can they see you? Where can they?
Me be cripplingly online on Twitter. Just at my name. That's where you can find me, and everything else is on there. So,
alrighty, thanks for joining us today.
Of course, my pleasure.
That's all for today. Check out Record Roulette on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at RR Music Pod. Rate and review this podcast wherever you can. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your favorite show, or listen for free at Record Roulette Podcast. .com. Music in this episode is from Lemon Music Studio. Thank you for listening to Record Roulette. Until the next spin, goodbye.